Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending upon where you are joining us from, and welcome to this webinar on the discussion paper on Accounting for Dynamic Risk Management, a Portfolio Revaluation Approach to Macro Hedging. Let me at the outset introduce myself. My name is Kumar Dasgupta, and I'm one of the technical directors at the ISB responsible for the current agenda on financial instruments. With me today are Martin Edelman, a board member, and Yuji Yamashita, a member of the technical staff, along with Mariela Eisen, again, a member of the technical staff, who will take us through this webinar and give us an overview of the current DP. Now, the structure of the webinar today is that Martin and Yuji will present an overview of the discussion paper, followed by question and answers. We will try and address as many questions as possible, given the time constraints. And so I will personally be looking at what questions come to us, and we will address those after the presentation is over. Now, before I hand over to Martin to start off the presentation, can I just quickly take you through some of the housekeeping items? And the list should be on your screen now in slide number 2. The slides that we are using for this webinar can be downloaded by clicking on the button below the slides window. To ask a question, type into the designated text box on your screen and click to submit. Please remember to turn off your pop-up blocker, otherwise this might not work. And last, a recording of this webcast will be available online at ifrs.org. So with that, I would like to hand over to Martin to start off the presentation. It's all yours, Martin.
Thanks, Kumar, and good morning also from my side. So we are on slide number 3, and it is an overview, really, what is this DP about. And many banks and other institutions manage interest rate risk and other risks dynamically on a portfolio basis instead of an individual contract basis. Because those risks and how they are managed change over time, that continuously process is difficult to account for under the current reporting rules, and therefore the IASB is exploring an accounting approach to better reflect dynamic risk management activities in entities' financial statements. So the discussion paper uses the dynamic interest rate risk management by banks for illustrative purposes. However, the approach which we have outlined in the DP is intended to be applicable also to other risks, and we have some discussion which kind of risks these are, and we found commodity risk and foreign exchange risk, but as I said, it is not limited to this kind of risk, and we're using really interest rate risk management in banks to illustrate what the approach is about. So move to the next slide, number 4, dynamic risk management. What do we mean by that? So dynamic risk management is a continuous process where risk management is undertaken for open portfolios, which is really the most important thing. And what are open portfolios? Open portfolios are portfolios to which new exposure are frequently added and existing exposure mature. So we, in a later slide, explain that for a bank, for example, if loans and other financial assets come into this open portfolios and all the liabilities like deposits or time deposits and added by this on a daily basis and also removed by mature or other liquidation purposes every day. And the risk is then managed on a net position, which is very important. So as the risk profile of the open portfolio changes, risk management is updated frequently in reaction to the changed net risk position. And as a picture in this slide shows, okay, we understand dynamic risk management also, it is not only hedging, it starts really with identification, what are the risks of this net position, and analyzing this kind of risk, and then as a last step maybe to decision to mitigate this risk, and mitigation is mostly done by hedging, and hedging then with derivatives. So that is what we think, okay, dynamic risk management is about, and we looking really for an accounting solution of this kind of activities of dynamic risk management, and as I said, illustrated how interest rate risk management is done by banks. Let's move to slide number 5. What are the current challenges under IAS 39, but also under our new hedge accounting standard under IFRS 9? So current hedge accounting requirements are often difficult to apply for dynamic risk management. And why is that? Because in IAS 39, but also to most of the hedge accounting requirements under IFRS 9, there is a one-to-one linkage necessary between what is being hedged and the hedging derivatives or the hedging instrument. So many people call that designation and de-designation. So to apply for hedge accounting, you have to designate an underlying position within the risk management position. And you can imagine, especially for open portfolios, that is very difficult because that if you do the management on a net position is really then not linked to individual transactions, then if you want to apply hedge accounting, you have to designate and de-designate every day or every hour, and that is making it very burdensome and very difficult. So dynamic risk management, because can only directly accommodate risk management on a net basis, that is what I said, through cross-designation, which I explained, and as I said, it is very difficult and costly to do, and can only accommodate open portfolios by treating them as a series of closed portfolios with short lives. So what banks have done really to apply for that, they have looked at really kind of series of closed positions, and then through designation and de-designation try to apply hedge accounting for this kind of risk management of open portfolios. And also in the past, or if it's the current rules, okay, the kind of behavioralization of exposure is very limited, and the most prominent example is really the kind of core deposits, where banks especially think, okay, that the life, so time of this kind of deposits are longer than the contractual term, and they include in the risk management strategies really then the behavioralized, so the expected life and not really the contractual life. But that is really not possible under the current rules, and we in our DP try to give a solution also for this kind of exposures to include this kind of exposure based on a behavioralized basis. Slide number 6 gives you kind of a overview how banks doing dynamic risk management, and you can see from the slide that before really they designate something sent with a risk management instrument, they look for a natural offset of kind of position. In this chart here, a bank has mortgage loans, it has corporate loans on the asset side and demand deposits and time deposits on the liability side. But before doing any hedging, say looking at what is the natural offset of this kind of position, for example, what is really the 1 year time bucket from mortgage loans, from corporate loans, to what kind of maybe demand deposit with an expected life of 1 year and with time deposits with a contractual term of 1 year, do you have already a natural offset of the risk? And then if you, for example, have then a net position, and this net position is then maybe hedged during a derivative, and then to mitigate that risk, and that is kind of what we think is dynamic risk management. So the net position is then really an offset of the nature of the all kind of assets and liabilities, and risk management, risk manager are looking really, do we have a natural offset, and if we have then net open position, then the decision maybe is taken to hedge this kind of position. So what is really the portfolio approach, portfolio revaluation approach about? That is on slide number seven. So when applying the portfolio revaluation approach, an entity would identify the risk being managed that has arisen from exposure with open portfolios and would revalue those exposures, so the managed exposure, only for changes in the risk being managed. Risks that are not dynamically managed, for example, credit margin represented by a portion of the assets and liabilities on the following figures, would not be included in the portfolio revaluation approach. So the portfolio revaluation approach accordingly is not a full fair value model. So when, for example, a normal loan is included in this portfolio revaluation approach and risk management has decided really to hedge it or to hedge it down to the 3-month LIBOR, only this kind of risk is then reevaluated and not any credit risk which maybe is included in this loan or exposure. So that is quite important to understand. So it should not be really confused with fair value, because in a fair value measure you have sent to revalue for credit risk, for liquidity risk, and for other risks, even if these risks are not managed. And here we only try to reevaluate the exposure on a net basis, really for the risks which is being managed by the by risk management. On slide 7, so you can see exposure within open portfolios are revalued with respect to the managed risks, which is why that, and in this example, it is only interest rate risk. And it is not, and that is very important, a full fair value model. On page number 7, you can see that the net effect between the revaluation adjustment of the managed exposure and the fair value changes of the risk management instruments, I have forgotten to say that clearly the, if a bank is using derivatives to hedge this exposure, these derivatives have to be accounted for fair value. But then we have an offset between the managed risk on the hedge exposure and then the fair value movements of the hedged instruments. And that is be illustrated on page number 8, where you can see the revaluation adjustment then goes into net profit and loss, and also the fair value changes of the risk management instruments go also to profit and loss. And usually you have then an offset if you have a good hedge. And therefore, okay, you don't find in the financial statements and any accounting noise from the hedge activities being done. Having said that, I want now give the floor to Yuji, who gives us some more details about, okay, before doing that, I will maybe elaborate, okay, what are the expected improvements with the PRR, and this is on slide number 9. So the advantage of this approach is it enhances information about dynamic risk management, because under the current rules, many banks or other institutions only do apply hedge accounting for a portion and more or less doing it to manage the accounting noise, so the P&L volatility, maybe from the derivatives which are used, but it is not very transparent to users of financial statements to see really what is the risk management activity about, so they cannot really drive from the financial statements about the effectiveness of risk management, and that approach should help to overcome that and give them better insight into risk management activities. Secondly, the expected improvements are what I said already, it reduces operational complexity such as tracking and amortization, so it is not really necessary to have the linkage between the hedged item and the hedging instrument and do this designation, de-designations, which also, based on my experience, I worked in a bank for long years, is very burdensome, and really also you can apply a lot of errors if you do something wrong and have a huge accounting risk. So that should be also overcome because, as I said, it is done on a net portfolio basis and not on an individual financial instrument basis. Third, it captures the dynamic nature of risk management on the net basis. And fourth, as I said, one of the biggest advantages is we consider that all the behavioral factors can be included, that, and that is even more important, I think, kind of core deposits, where many risk management apply a more behavioral term instead of the contractual term. And lastly, it considers different types of risks managed in open portfolios. Having said that, now I hand over to Yuji, who gives us some more details about the approach.
Okay, please move on to slide 10. This slide illustrates an example in which behavioral law rather than contractual factors are considered when you apply the PRA. The example specifically deals with core demand deposits, as Martin mentioned. Contractually, demand deposits have a variable interest rate and can be withdrawn anytime, even today. However, in a banking environment, it's common for customers to maintain demand deposit accounts for an extended period of time. Because of this sticky nature of customer behavior, banks often identify a part of the demand deposit portfolio that is considered to be stable and treat that portion as a fixed interest rate liability with longer maturity, say 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, for the purpose of dynamic risk management. Accordingly, the DP explores whether the cash flow of exposures that are dynamically managed should be considered on a behavioral basis. However, please note, in the context of core demand deposits, the consideration of behavioral factors represents a conceptual challenge because for accounting purposes, deposits that are callable on demand are assumed to have zero fair value risk with regard to interest rate changes, and consequently, they are prevented from being designated in a hedging relationship under current hedge accounting requirements. Let me move on to next slide, 11. This is about the scope issue. Here, the scope means what exposures to be included in the PRA. You know, please note the scope has significant implications for the information provided to users of financial statements and on how operationally feasible the application of the PRA will be for an entity. The DP basically prepared two scope alternatives. One is focused on dynamic risk management, and the other is focus on risk mitigation. Let me explain in more detail using next slide. Please move on to slide 12. The red circle in the slide 12 shows that all of dynamically managed portfolios in assets and liabilities are included in the PRA. Under this scope alternative, the PRA would be applied to all managed, dynamically managed portfolios, regardless of the extent to which any net open risk positions of those managed portfolios have been hedged. Let me quickly mention about pros and cons of this alternative. One of the advantages of this scope alternative is that financial statements would provide a complete picture of an entity's dynamic risk management. But as a mirror image, a disadvantage is that the liberation of even unhedged exposures with no offsetting effect from risk management instruments would lead to potential volatility in profit or loss. Please move on to slide 13. This slide deals with a second scope alternative, which is a focus on risk mitigation. Under this alternative, the PRA would only be applied when the entity has undertaken risk mitigation through hedging. The basic advantage of this scope alternative is that it would prevent volatility in profit or loss arising from unhedged net open risk positions. Disadvantage would be that information about the effect of the decisions not to hedge would no longer be portrayed. Please note, operational feasibility is an issue with this scope alternative because it's unlikely that the purpose of dynamic risk management is always to hedge only a specific sub-portfolios. So for instance, in the case of this example, only a mortgage sub-portfolio and core demand deposit sub-portfolio are risk mitigated through hedging, but sometimes a bank can change its risk management purpose. Please move on to page 14. This slide discusses the second approach under the focus on risk mitigation. This is the proportional approach. Under this approach, a hedged position is determined as a proportion of the dynamically managed portfolio, and consequently, the PRA would only be applied to the proportion. For instance, if a bank identified that it has hedged 80% of its interest rate exposure in all of dynamically managed portfolios, then the PRA would only be applied to that 80%. Again, operational feasibility is an issue because it is unlikely the bank's risk management purpose is to hedge 80%. Okay. Now let me move on to the final slide, page 15. As Martin mentioned, the PLA is intended to be applied to other risks than interest rate risk among banks, such as commodity price risk and FX risk. This slide shows an example of a commodity price risk, say a copper refinery that manages copper price risk dynamically. In this example, purchases, including both fixed and variable prices exposures, and sales, again, fixed and variable price exposures, and inventory are all dynamically managed. And net open risk position between purchase, sales, and inventory are mitigated with risk management instruments, say commodity price derivatives. So basically, you can understand this example in analogy with interest rate risk management. The purpose of this DP is to learn more about whether the PLA could be applied to other risks and whether there is a need for the PRA for them. So let me finish my explanation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. Thanks. Thank you, Yuji, for taking us through the slide pack. The comment period for this DP is 180 days, and it expires on the 17th of October, 2014. And as with all of the others, you can access the DP, the snapshot, and the other stay up to date on the project by going to the web page on dynamic risk management, and that's on the slide. So with that, I would like to bring us this session to the question and answers, and let me start off by directing the first question towards Martin, which has come up, is that first, why the DP and not an exposure draft?
Yeah, because I think usually what we have changed our standard setting process is that with a lot of projects, if we need some more research, we don't enter into directly into an exposure draft. We starting with a DP because we want really to learn about what is really the problem, what is our, I think, solution to a problem. Is that shared by others? So we want to learn more about really the issue and the solution to the issue. And especially in this project, I think it is important, and as Yuji mentioned, because maybe we have some understanding how banks really do dynamic risk management of interest rates, interest rate risk, but maybe we don't have such an experience based on other risk. If really dynamic risk management is done for commodity risk and for foreign exchange, and what maybe are the issues, and that is a reason, one of the reasons why we wanted to have first with a discussion paper, and you can see we have many questions in the discussion paper, so we don't know anything around a lot of all the solutions, and we want to learn more and really get input from our constituents about this approach which we have discussed, and is it suitable for other risks, is it suitable for banks, and what maybe are the issues and the solutions.
Okay, thanks, Martin. And can I just take you on to that? Was that, can you give us a background of why this project was separated from Nine?
Yeah, because my Nine was done because of the reaction of the financial crisis, because you know there was many criticism about our standards, and we found really that this discussion about macro hedging was also difficult. In the past, we have a lot of criticism. You mentioned the European carve-out regarding our macro hedge solutions. And therefore, we thought, okay, to provide a solution already for the more urgent things, which are really kind of impairment and classification and measurement, we think, okay, it was really wise to separate this project, so to have the general hedge accounting rules, to have some improvements there. But we thought we need a longer discussion really for this macro hedging, and therefore we have separated. And you have seen now, maybe we come now in June with the final standard of IFRS 9, so that is already some years after the crisis has started. But I think if we have to wait it for really the solution for this macro hedge stuff, I think it would have even taken longer. And that was the main reason why we think, okay, it is a good idea to separate this project from the general hedge accounting solutions.
Okay, let me take you to the next round of questions, and let me address this to you, G. And the question is this DP relevant to all entities? And that brings me up to the other questions on other risks, but can we first consider the question, is it relevant to all entities or is it just focused on banks?
Okay, the preliminary views in the DP are potentially relevant to all entities that dynamically managed risks in open portfolios. But, how can I say, the PLA presented in this DP is not intended to be limited to banks or hedges of interest rate risk. In addition, if the preliminary views in this DP became a final standard, how entities will be affected will depend on whether the model was mandatory or optional.
Okay. And can you just take us through on what are the propositions in the DP for other risks like commodity price risk and foreign exchange risk?
Okay. The basic... how can I say? Basically, it is true that DP focuses on the interest rate risk management in banks, but it is just that is a well-known example of dynamic risk management. But we also, the ISB thinks that considered model, PLA, could be applied to other risks such as commodity price risk and FX risk. So that we included some explanations on these other risks in the DP, but so far our understanding on these risks is less than that of interest rate risk in banks. So we want to gather information for the IASB to make a good considerations and judgment on other risks. So our DP asks about other risks.
So to summarize, what I think both Martin and Yuji commented on is that although the DP focuses on interest rate risk, there is a discussion in the document on how potentially the similar model could be applied for foreign exchange and presumably commodity price risk as well. And we have a question on dynamic risk management of leases as well. What currently you're looking for is feedback on whether this is a possibility, and if so, how do you think the accounting will enhance and help users also to understand dynamic risk management going on in industries beyond financial services? Is that correct, Martin?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, can I just bring you back to some of the other things which has questions that we have got is, what do you think are the ISB's next steps?
Yeah, the next step, I think, is that we hopefully receive a lot of comments to our questions which we have asked in the DP. And I think then we have to elaborate, okay, is that really an approach which is a solution for the known problems of dynamic risk management to make that more transparent in financial statements? And if so, I think we have to then discuss, okay, a lot of things which we have not finally decided on regarding behavioralization or other things, okay, is it really what we can do? What are the limits of that? And I think then the next step of that is, okay, hopefully enter into an exposure draft for standard.
And coming to this question, which is also related, which we have just now got a question on, is what do you think, the question is, how does it interact with the FASB's work in financial instruments? And just let me take this up, means that what this DP tries to do is look at the current IAS 39 fair value macro hedging model, and the FASB doesn't have an equivalent model for that as of now. So consequently, I think we are not trying to progress towards a converged solution on this. They are certainly tracking the project and are aware of what we are doing. We will be discussing, but it is these are two separate work streams on what we are doing as compared to what FASB is considering for their financial instruments project. That would be correct?
Yep, that was my understanding.
Yep. Okay, now coming to a little bit more on the detailed questions which have come in, and let me address this firstly on the hedging side. Like, it is a model which does try and address some of the dynamic risk management or hedging that's going on with banks. And the question we have got is that, how do we handle with effectiveness?
I think there is not any effectiveness issue in this approach, because if you think about that, Manoli, it is an approach for a kind of selected portfolio of this open portfolio, which then based on the scope which usually is cast, is then reevaluated for the managed risk. And if it is, I think, then hedged effectively or not does not matter, because I think that is then make transparent through the revaluation if the effectiveness is there or is not there. And therefore, I think the effectiveness test, as known under IAS 39, if it qualifies then for hedge accounting, is not an issue for this approach, because this approach would make transparent really the kind of how effectiveness the risk management works. And if it is not effective, you can see it in the P&L, and if it is effective, I think there is a huge offset then between the hedging instrument and the hedged items, and therefore an effectiveness test as a kind of qualifying into this approach, I don't see as an issue with our proposal here.
Okay. On a related side, where it is coming in, and let me address this to Martin as well, is one of the questions is, do you think this insurers can use this model?
Yeah, I have not in detail thought about that, but clearly my insurance companies doing also a lot of interest rate risk management, because they have all the premiums coming in, they have to invest that in maybe financial instruments which have also interest rate risk, so insurance company have to hedge their interest rate risk. And I don't know if they're doing it the same way as banks, so they have a net position dynamic risk management, but I think that is one of the reasons why we have this discussion paper and to learn more, and if really insurance companies applying that, then we hopefully hear from them, okay, that this approach would also work for them and what maybe what kind of changes we need. But as I said, generally, yes, I think because that is what we have expressed in the exposure draft, it maybe is something for many entities, and clearly if insurance companies have interest rate risk, I don't see how it works with insurance risk, but really if they manage interest rate risk in the same way as banks and doing it on a dynamic way, yes, maybe, why not?
Yes, absolutely. Just to add to that, means when we look at the DP, clearly the board's intention is not to restrict this for a particular industry.
Yeah.
It's more of how you manage and whether it's dynamic and how we capture it in the financial statements. And that's why we have quite a few questions in the DP asking, well, do you think this is appropriate? Do you think this will be relevant? So for insurers, I would say we wait to hear back from them and see how that might be possible. But having said that, just to make one point, this is a mismatch which we are trying to eliminate in profit or loss. So that's the critical aim of this discussion paper and the model. So at the end of the day, that is the focus. And so that's what we need to keep in mind, or any other industry needs to keep in mind, is that what we are trying to eliminate.
When we have some discussion, okay, how it works if it really goes to UCI, right? It is also in the discussion paper, man, we identified some difficulties if UCI is really then the position in the financial statements where this will be impacted. But what our preliminary discussion think, okay, maybe there are some additional issues if that is also applied, if this net effect is only shown in UCI.
Absolutely. Okay, coming down that, and let me address this question to UG, and this comes on the scope alternative, the focus on dynamic risk management.
Yes.
And the question is that under this scope alternative, even unhedged positions would get revalued. And don't you think that will lead to increase in profit and loss volatility?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In some circumstances, for instance, if a bank hedges only a part of all of the dynamically managed portfolios, say, if you hedge only mortgage portfolios, but the scope alternative includes all of dynamically managed portfolios, including mortgage portfolios, it can increase the volatility in profit or loss potentially. So we fully notice that problem, and we carefully discuss the pros and cons of this scope alternatives, and we recognize the problem of revaluing even unhedged positions is one of the cons of this approach.
And to add to that, yes, it is absolutely right. We do discuss this in detail in the DP discussion paper. And we also ask a question to constituents to get receive feedback on which of the approaches do you think is more relevant. Because the other approach that is there in the DP is a focus on risk mitigation or a focus on hedging, which is more similar to a hedge accounting solution. Now, along with that comes certain complications, which comes with a hedging solution of starting on and off, and these are covered in quite a bit of detail, and what we would request constituents is to give us feedback on what do you think is more operationally feasible, and also from users to tell us what gives the better or more useful or faithful representation of dynamic risk management. Now, moving on, it's one of the questions on that has come up is, can you expand a bit more on what you would like to hear about commodities and how it is risk managed? So what exactly are we looking for when we ask constituents on some feedback on dynamic risk management in commodities?
Okay. As for commodity price, other risks such as commodity price risk, so far we identified some similarities between interest rate risk management and other risks such as commodity price risk. But again, our understanding on other risk is quite limited. So there are some specific questions to leaders of the discussion DP. For instance, in the case of commodity price risk, as we explained, the commodity price risk management usually includes inventory, so that can be a potential difference between commodity price risk and interest rate risk management. The other differences, potential differences, would be, for instance, in the case of other risks such as commodity price risk, as far as we understand, many corporates include, say, forecast transactions are exposures that are not yet contractually that doesn't have any contractual basis, but they tend to include these exposures in dynamic risk management. So there is a tendency in corporates to include much amount of these exposures. If we include these exposures in dynamic risk management and apply PRA, the liberation of these exposures can lead to more profit or loss volatility. So there are some these kinds of complications if you want to apply the portfolio reversion approach to commodity price risks. So we include some discussions on these some differences between interest rate risk and other risks, and we ask about these questions.
Thank you. So to summarize, what we are asking for feedback on for commodities is, do you think a model that is there in the form of PRA will work in case of commodities? Yes. Is that how you manage your net open positions? Also, clearly, as you pointed out, the challenges of having highly probable forecast transactions and how they're layered in the hedging, and do you think it will reduce P&L volatility to represent the dynamic risk management that's going on?
Yes.
So effectively what we are looking for is, is the similar model going to work, or do we need to tweak the model for commodities and other risks, if possible, for it to be effective in practice to represent dynamic risk?
Yes, as Kumar mentioned, so far we are not sure there is a actual need or workable solution for other risks than interest rate risk. So this is our, you know, the most high-level question to leaders.
But I think also one is very important, and this should not be seen as an additional tool to reduce P&L volatility. And that is also why we have said, okay, it is not really a macro hedge discussion paper, it is a kind of to make really dynamic risk management more transparent. And then based what Yuchi said on the scope, it can really, compared to the current situation, can have more P&L volatility, but which is showing then maybe that the company has more risk,
yes.
And or based on another scope, which is then very limited, maybe is then more really to kind of hedged item, and then it is really more focused on operational ability compared to the current solution. But that is, I think, not decided. But if we want to have it more transparent, I think it is not really, our purpose is not really another tool for managing P&L volatility, is make dynamic risk management more transparent in financial statements.
Okay, and now, this is a critical question, and let me just bring it to Martin. And the question is that, are there any criteria or restrictions to use the PRA approach rather than general hedge accounting as of now in the DP?
That is a critical question. Maybe you should answer that. No, but let me try. No, I don't. But I think, okay, as a prerequisite, maybe you should agree, you should not do artificial, then, okay, it should be based really on your risk management activities. But as I said, there is not any effectiveness testing, because I think then what you have to do really in kind of disclosure, you have to say, okay, is it linked? And then what is really done in risk management that has to be reflected in your financial statement. And that is similar, I think, from the move which we have done from IAS 39 to IFRS 9 to link it more really to what actually is happening in risk management. And I think that is the most important, I think, prerequisite for this kind of this approach.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let me just add, because this is indeed a critical issue.
But let me add maybe one thing I forgot. Maybe I think what we have not discussed, for example, is, okay, if we allow a kind of behavioralization, for example, of core demand deposit, because what can happen, for example, is that risk management think, okay, I think, okay, even if, okay, the contractual term is on a one day, we include that in this approach kind of 5-year term based on behavior. And let's assume, okay, risk management is changing that now, okay, next day that they don't have said 5 years, I will move it to 10 years, and then, okay, you have a big impact in P&L. And I think we have to, if we allow that, we have to find some restriction. It should be based on maybe, do you have experience with that? Can you demonstrate really that the behavioral term is in a certain manner what you include, I think, in your risk management and then in your financial statements. And as I said, we have not discussed that in detail, but I would expect that if we allow this behavioralization, we have to limit it a little bit, and therefore we need some factors around that. And I would not say to hinder abuse, but I think that is, and I think also if a risk management is doing that, he has to have some basis for doing that, and then I think we maybe then ask for disclosure of that basis. And absolutely.
I think on this question, what the DP does, and it does acknowledge, is that the only criteria we put in, and we do not define what is dynamic risk management, we give what are the characteristics of dynamic risk management. And the theme, as Martin pointed out, is clearly to align it as much as possible with the actual risk management going on in entities. Having said that, the DP also discusses and asks the question is how far and complete alignment between accounting and risk management is appropriate and desirable, given that some of the practices may not marry completely with what is the conceptual requirements in accounting. And thereby, we might need to consider, and we do ask constituents this question in the DP, of how do you think we can bring about some qualifying criteria, if at all that is required. For example, the key area which Martin covered was core demand deposit. So this is certainly a critical part where we would like feedback from constituents on what do you think should be the in and out mechanism. And also, without going into too much detail, it interacts heavily with the scope alternative, what is there in the DP. Now, given the time, I would like to finish this with one last question, is that what do you think is, how does it give better information to users? And Yuji, can you quickly just present, tell us about the income presentation that is there and
okay.
what are the alternatives?
Okay, the DP discusses basically two income statement presentations. One is actual net interest income presentation. The other is stable net interest income presentation. Please note that total profit or loss are the same between the two. The difference is how net interest income, that is obviously the focus of dynamic interest rate risk management, is presented. There is a difference between two. Under actual net interest income, actual interest revenue and interest expense would be presented along with an additional line which would include net interest income from risk management instruments. This alternative would provide pre- and post-dynamic risk management view of net interest income. Let me be more in concrete. If you look at interest revenue and interest expense, and if you look at the difference, you find the pre-risk management view. But if you look at the net interest income after the effect of dynamic interest, dynamic risk management, you can have the view how the dynamic risk management had the bearing on the net interest income. Under the stable net interest income presentation, net interest income would be reported on the assumption, or how can I say, an aspiration that a bank's dynamic risk management objective is to stabilize net interest income, and that objective is achieved irrespective of whether or not the bank has been able to achieve such a stable profile through its dynamic risk management. So the advantage of this approach is you can identify the per net interest income according to the bank's purpose of risk management. Thank you.
So effectively, in addition, we have also some alternatives for the balance sheet presentation of these things. What the income presentation that you spoke about in the profit or loss, what it tries to do is tell users is what is the impact of dynamic risk management very clearly on the face on the net interest income that is being managed by the bank.
Yes.
Okay. Given the time, I think, and we have covered most of the question themes that we have got, I would like to bring this webcast to a close just to remind people that the slides and the webcast will be available on our website. So if you want to access it later, you can do so. And there is another one scheduled at 2 o'clock UK time for the today as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining. And thanks, Yuji. Thanks, Martin. Thank you.
Thank you very much.